I could see the light in your eyes even in the dark of the night. Like a bonfire, growing bigger than the pit that was meant to contain it. Catching, dangerous, and beautiful. I'm sure some of it reflected back to you from my own eyes. We stood out on the street in front of the Roasted Rooster. You wore the same clothes you'd had on earlier, and I had definitely gone a little bit overboard with the B&E outfit. We had gone our separate ways for a few hours after talking to Kiara, and when you picked me up from my house later, you greeted me by laughing. I'm pretty sure you called me Catwoman, too, which, I know, the head-to-toe all-black with a bandana mask look was trying way too hard, but give me a break. I'd never done anything remotely lawbreaking before. I felt really stupid, but surprisingly comfortable with being laughed at by you. Probably because your laugh is so darn cute. I wanted to go change, but you looked like you were anxious to get going, so I hopped into your Jeep and hoped it was dark enough that you couldn't see me turn red. You know something I've noticed about being a void creature? A reanimated whatever I am? I can still see my own features. I'm not sure if that's just because my mind is tricking my eyes, but I can look down at myself and see everything as it was and should be. 10 distinct fingers, clothes just the same as they were when I died. Puddles and lasagna still look like living black holes, like emptiness personified, like starless night skies or those drawings you get done of your family at theme parks where it's just the solid dark outline of your head in profile. I still can't see any of their finer features, but I can see myself. Is that because I'm human? Was human? If you looked at me, would you see me as I was and as I still consider myself to be? Or am I featureless to you? Emptiness personified, starless night sky. You were excited to be having this adventure. For all my unease with breaking the law, I felt excited too. We made it to the coffee shop, and you turned to me. "Ready?" you asked. I was about to answer, but then there came a great big bang on my car window. I jumped and let out a startled "Ugh!" and there, outside the car, laughing, was Kiara. "You guys are really stupid, you know that?" she said. You asked what she was doing there while I sucked air back into my jumpy lungs. "Helping your stupid selves get in," she said. "I know you, Amy. You don't just let things go. So I figured I could either let you go in and control the damage, or I could let you get arrested." I told her I really appreciated her helping us. She raised an eyebrow at me and walked to the door, unlocking it easily with the key she had hooked onto her belt. We shared a smile, your eyes still aglow, and mine probably relieved that we wouldn't have to commit a felony. And we followed. "Why are you dressed like Catwoman?" Kiara asked. The manager's office of the Roasted Rooster looks more like a private chapel than an office. "This used to be a private chapel for personal devotions," Kiara said. Well, that explained it. We got in easily, and Kiara said, "Lock up on your way out. Don't visit me at work again." She left. You turned on a lamp. The room was bathed in a golden light, your face glowing gently alongside the barren mahogany desk surface spanning the majority of the little private chapel. The desk had an inlaid etching of a compass, tilted diagonally so that each corner of the room aligned with a clear cardinal point. Each corner of the room had a glass case displaying something large and ornate. East, an incense holder, designed to swing back and forth on a golden chain to disperse the fumes it would produce. South, a closed manuscript of some kind, presumably the Bible, displaying, instead of pages, a jewel-laden cover worth more than both my own kidneys. West, a bishop's cap, worn at the rim and billowing at the top. And north, "Vera," you said, soft voice deafening in the silence of the intruded space. "Vera, you brought a picture of the book, right?" I nodded. Your back was to me, so you couldn't see it, but I couldn't find the words inside me just yet. The north corner had a book just as the south did. The north corner had a book bound in red, just as the south did not. I nodded. Your back was to me, so I took the picture out of the back pocket of my black skinny jeans and I walked to where you were, there in front of the red-bound book. You took hold of one corner of the photo and glanced at it to confirm our suspicions. You glanced at me to confirm that I was still there, seeing it too. You gazed at the glass separating us from our goal and you gazed past it, onto that glorious red which meant our victory and my protection from the souls of my forefathers who had wandered in tortured aimlessness around an earth that would not swallow them. Forefathers who had waited for my birth and for my death to claim their hard-earned rest. I put the photo back into my pocket, and we found out together that all it took was a little bit of lifting until I could hold in my hands my own salvation. The binding was rough to the touch, a cloth of some kind that must have been treated with something to make it last through each generation. I couldn't help myself fast enough. You placed the glass back down onto its pedestal, now glaringly empty in the lamplight, holding an air which now had nothing to cling to. I opened the book. I couldn't read it. Not one word of it. I flipped through page after page of meaninglessness, staring hard, staring as though tears of frustration were not forming in my eyes, trying to blind me, to rob me of even the sight of the symbol staring right back up at me without sympathy. This was supposed to save me? This was supposed to unveil the secret to cosmic protection against all ills for myself and for future generations of my family? You must have seen the anger I felt. It must have pushed against you like wave after wave carving away at a rock for eons, eroding the solid formation with its own dust and a steady persistence. You came closer anyway. "Vera," you said again. This time, it sounded far away. The anger in my ears acted like a cotton shield against the vibrations of outward sound. I flipped more pages, spilled more tears on more meaningless symbols. You caught my hand and stopped it from turning more pages. I let you stop the tide from turning, let you comfort me and ground me back into practicality. I nodded, and you saw it that time. I nodded, and you saw it, and I took a step back. You, pragmatic and practical and level-headed you, stepped forward to balance out my action. You flipped through some of the pages, shaking off the assault of the symbols and their mocking forms, and as you flipped, a paper slipped loose of the binding and landed at your feet. You picked it up. The paper didn't appear as old as the pages bound in the red cloth on the table. Still old, sure, but with more of a beige than a yellow tint to it. You opened it. A letter looked up at us, in gloriously readable script. Script which did not look the way an aunt's handwriting should look. Script from the hand of my mother's sister, Mabel Le Fay. Parts of it were faded. Parts of it were botched out by tears that had scarred the page irreparably many years before mine ever had the chance to. Most of it was readable. Lucinda, Ink Moon is tomorrow, and you are going to... blotched out. You ever got to be the keeper is beyond me. Tomorrow is Ink Moon and I have finally found a way to stop... faded. Foolish, you won't be able to tell a soul. You won't have the means to. I found the vial, I have to... faded and blotched. Mabel. We each read it a few times, frowning separately and then together and then individually in confusion. What does she mean, Ink Moon? I asked. And what does she mean, I have the vial? You asked. And how should I know what any of this means? We both asked, without words. Your frown turned into a different kind of frown. Vera, you said, and I thought I could hear fear in your voice, and I didn't like that at all. The picture. I took the picture out of my pocket again and gave it to you. You stared at it. We had each done a lot of staring that night. The picture I had brought had my mother in the foreground, bent over the tome we were bending over now, years later. The background held a young Mabel, small with distance but clear and clearly speaking to someone off camera. You stared at it, and I did too, to feel like I was figuring something out like you were when really I was not. You brought a finger up and pointed to what your latest frown had been for. Around Mabel's neck was a silver chain. At the end of the chain, peeking out from her blouse, was something almost like a locket, but not quite. Vera, you said. The volume of it matched the pulsing of my own heartbeat in my ears. Vera, I don't think we were right to trust Mabel. Louder than a gunshot out of the darkness rang a sickly sweet poison honey voice. A voice of an aunt who had never existed until she needed to find the book to complement the vial hanging from her necklace. A voice that said, "Oh, you clever girl."